Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to The Haunted Collection with your host, writer, paranormal investigator, and haunted collector Kevin Kane, back to share more creepy tales of terror and ghostly shenanigans. Thank you for tuning in for another episode. I really enjoy doing these episodes where I get to read and tell scary, creepy stories that I used to hear when I was a kid, and that I'm happy to still be able to share today. Before we get started with some of these stories, I just want to invite you, as always, to visit myhaunteddolls.com and shop in my store. You can find and purchase the books I've written about ghostly tales and some supernatural novels I've written. You can also find the link to the Redbubble store, where you can find t-shirts and hats and all kinds of accessories and clothing and even pet accessories and home and office items, all bearing some of the logos that I've made, some of them for this show, The Haunted Collection, and some for my website, myhauntedolls.com. So please be sure to shop there and show your support today. And thank you to those who have already shopped there and made your purchases. You can also follow the link on the link page to my YouTube channel, My Haunted Dolls, where you can see the videos I've posted of investigations I've done with the items in my haunted collection. Yes, I have my very own collection of haunted items, dolls, paintings, tools, jewelry, and all sorts of things. So please be sure to check that out and be sure to subscribe and share. Just recently, in fact today, I received a wonderful shout-out for my channel from actress Jenna Davis, who does the voice of Megan in the film Megan. Yes, the one about the scary animatronic Megan doll that kills. If you've not seen that, be sure to see it. It's a great movie, and I hear they're already doing a sequel for next year. So thank you to Jenna Davis for your shout-out. It was very sweet. And now, also I want to make sure to mention my books again. Not only are they available on myhauntedolls.com, but you can find them on Amazon, on Kindle, Barnes & Nobles, and other various online booksellers. You can also find a few of them on Audible if you like to listen to books. And of course, they're all on Kindle if you prefer the ebook method. And so now, without further wait, let's go ahead and start with a couple of good, juicy ghost stories. This first one takes us to a haunted area, a haunted building that has to do with the education system. Yes, even schools, colleges, dorms, places like that can be haunted. And this story tells us about one of those places. It's called A Hitch in Time. Maybe you think strange and ghostly events only happen at midnight, or in spooky places like old castles, abandoned houses, and graveyards, or involve a terrible event like a suicide or a murder, but that's not entirely true. Sometimes the strangest things can happen in the most ordinary settings. That's what makes such events so frightening. They leave you with the feeling that in the middle of a perfectly normal, boring day, the most extraordinary thing can happen. Take the case of Mistress Colleen Butterball of Lincoln, Nebraska. She never expected to see a ghost. She certainly didn't expect to see one in the morning of October 3rd, 1963. That morning, Mistress Butterball went to work, as usual, at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. She was a secretary in the office of Dean Sam Dahl. She was at work, as always, at 8 o'clock in the morning. For the first 45 minutes, she did typing and other routine chores. There had been absolutely nothing out of the ordinary about the morning so far. At about a quarter to nine, Dean Dahl asked Mrs. Butterball to carry a message to Dr. Tom McCourt, who had an office in the nearby C.C. White building. Dr. McCourt was a music teacher, and the White building contained the offices of the music department. For a moment, Mrs. Butterball wondered why Dean Smith hadn't just picked up the phone and called Dr. McCourt. But that didn't matter much. It was just a short walk anyway. Mrs. Butterball entered the White building. It looked as it always did. Some girls in the hall were going into class. She could hear someone practicing a musical instrument in one of the rooms along the hall. All perfectly ordinary, perfectly normal. Mrs. Butterball walked down the hall a short distance and entered the first of the two rooms that were occupied by Dr. McCourt. She went about four steps into the first room when she was suddenly hit by an almost overpowering odor. The kind that simply stops you in your tracks and almost chokes you. It was musty and gave the impression that she was in a place that was very old and had not been occupied for a long time. Then she noticed something else. A moment earlier, she had been surrounded by the normal sounds of a college building. Now, there were no sounds at all. Everything was deathly quiet. For some reason, Mrs. Butterball found herself staring through the door to the second room of Dr. McCourt's suite and at an old music cabinet that stood against the back wall of the room. There was an unfamiliar female figure in front of the cabinet. The figure was facing the cabinet and thus had her back to Mrs. Butterball. But Mrs. Butterball could clearly see that the figure was that of an extremely tall and thin woman, wearing a long-sleeved white blouse and an ankle-length dark skirt. The woman's hair was piled on top of her head in a distinctly old-fashioned hairdo. The figure's arm was raised as if she was reaching for something in the cabinet. For several seconds, the figure did not move. But neither did Mrs. Butterball. She didn't try to walk toward it or call out to it or even run away. She just stood there and stared. The figure looked completely real. It was not vague or transparent. Yet somehow, Mrs. Butterball knew that it was not real. Quite suddenly, the woman at the cabinet disappeared. She didn't fade out or dissolve. She just disappeared, without having ever moved. However, the experience was not over yet. Mrs. Butterball got the distinct impression that there was someone else in the room with her, that a man was sitting at a desk on her left. She turned her head quickly, but no one was there. She still could not shake the strong feeling of another presence. Mrs. Butterball got her greatest shock when she looked through the window behind the desk. The window looked out on the university's Willard House, the girls' dormitory, and there was a street half a block away. Both were usually clearly visible through that window, but on this occasion, she could see neither. All she could see were a few trees in the rolling countryside. She also had the vague impression of a building on the right, but she could not see it clearly. Though this was an October morning, Mrs. Butterball was sure she was looking out on a warm summer afternoon scene. Everything was very still. It was then she realized these people were not in her time, but that she was back in their time somehow. That realization scared her. Mrs. Butterball retreated from the room, and back out in the hallway, the time returned to normal. The girls were still going into their class. The sound of musical instruments being practiced nearby once again reached her ears. Mrs. Butterball forgot her original errand and instead rushed back to her office in the old main building. There, she wondered what to do next. If she told people what had happened, they might think she was crazy. She tried to put the whole experience out of her mind, but she could not. After about a half an hour, she decided to tell Dean Dahl what had happened. The dean did not think she was crazy. He knew her too well. He assumed she was telling the truth. The next step was to try and find out what had happened. Some of the older members of the faculty remembered that the two rooms in which Mrs. Butterball's experience had taken place had been used for many years by a Miss Clara Urania Mills, a music teacher with a special interest in choral music. She had been at the university from 1912 until her death in 1936. The old-timers remember Miss Mills as a very tall woman with black hair. A picture of Miss Mills was found in a 1915 yearbook. Though Mrs. Butterball had not seen the face of the apparition at the cabinet, she was convinced it was that of the tall music teacher. The figure she had seen was also tall and thin. Her hairstyle was the same as that in the yearbook photograph. The cabinet drawer, for which the figure seemed to have been reaching, contained copies of old choral music, much of it dating from before 1936, the time of Miss Mills' death. Since choral music was her chief interest, the music in the cabinet may have been hers. The 1915 yearbook also contained photos of the campus. It looked just like the scene Mrs. Butterball had observed through the window during that brief but frightening moment. She had never seen old pictures of the campus before. The case came to the attention of the American Society for Psychical Research, which is always interested in strange and ghostly events. Dr. Gardner Murphy, the president of the society, thought it was so interesting that he personally went out to Nebraska to investigate. He didn't think that Mrs. Butterball was lying or crazy. He believed that she had seen and experienced something. Just what happened and why it happened at that particular moment remained a mystery. What puzzled Dr. Murphy and others is why this particular scene, Miss Mills reaching into the music cabinet, should have been presented at all. Miss Mills had died at the school at about 9 o'clock in the morning. That was roughly the same time of day Mrs. Butterball had her experience. But Miss Mills had died in a room across the hall, not in the room where she was seen. Her death had taken place in midwinter, and the scene had presented itself as that of midsummer. Besides, the clothes were of a much earlier era, about 1915, not 1936, the year of Miss Mills' death. In many accounts of ghosts, there is the motive of a search, an attempt by the ghost to find something important here on earth. A treasure or a lost will, for example. In other accounts, the ghost returns to take care of some vital unfinished business, like identifying his or her murderer. This apparition appears to have been looking for choral music. That seems so trivial to most of us that it's almost funny. But Miss Mills was a woman who was devoted to choral music. So perhaps the search was important to her. So you never know when these things may jump out at you. You don't have to be in a haunted house or a graveyard. You may just be walking along the corridor of your school, seeing the ordinary sights, listening to the ordinary sounds, when all of a sudden... That was a really good story and makes you think. I don't know how I would feel if I walked in a room and suddenly time changed on its own for a brief minute or two and I saw people who were supposed to be dead. That's got to be very creepy, very chilling. And speaking of chilling, here comes the next story for this episode. This is a really eerie tale called Beware Jack. The spirits are supposed to communicate with the living in a variety of ways. As we have just seen in recent years, they have been making phone calls. Sometimes they are supposed to take charge of the body of a particularly sensitive person called a medium and speak through him or her. And at other times, the spirits are said to direct the action of some sort of device, like a Ouija board or a spirit box like we use in today's technology. But historically speaking, the most popular form of spiritual communication is automatic writing. That's when the spirits are supposed to take control of a person's hand, or if the person happens to be using a typewriter, both hands, or in our case, a computer in these days, and direct the person's writing. The human subject, the person who is actually doing the writing, has no conscious control over what is being written. There are a lot of people who have claimed to produce whole books by automatic writing. If that is what's actually happening, then the spirits are a wordy and boring bunch. Earlier in the last century, a St. Louis housewife named Pearl Curran claimed that she was writing under the direction of a spirit named Patience Worth. Patience, or Pearl as she was called, produced an astonishing flow of poems and stories and novels. Millions of words. For a while, Patience Worth had a following, but no one reads that stuff today for good reason. It's pretty boring to today's audience. But every once in a while, there is a case involving automatic writing that is a good deal more exciting. Take, for example, what happened in the vacation village of Pentwater, Michigan, in the early 1960s. At one time, Pentwater was a very elegant place. The summer homes built there by rich people were practically mansions. By the 1960s, that opulent style of summer life, when wealthy families had lots of servants, had practically disappeared. However, some of the big old summer houses were still occupied. One of them was the house of Celeste McVoy Holden. That summer was a lonely time for Celeste. She had just separated from her husband, Jack. A couple of servants came during the day, but they lived in town, and she was alone with her 4-month-old baby all night. Celeste had asked her friend, Buell Mullen, to spend the next few weeks with her at the house, and Buell agreed. Buell's husband had some business to take care of and was not able to come out to the summer house at once. He had arranged to join the two women at Pentwater later in the week. Shortly after Buell arrived at the house, she sat down to write her husband a letter. It contained the rather complicated directions needed for getting to the Holden house, which was in an isolated spot well back in the woods. As Buell was writing, it seemed to her that suddenly some invisible force took control of her hand. She struggled to get control back, but without success. Buell watched with fascination and horror as her own hand began to write a message. The handwriting was quite different from her own. So were the thoughts that she wrote. The message read, "Beware, beware, beware." Buell had no idea what this meant. And then her hand scrawled a final word, "Jack." After that, the force released her hand. Badly shaken, Buell took the message and showed it to Celeste. The words had a great impact on her, for Jack was the name of her ex-husband. Celeste had divorced him largely because of his violent and uncontrollable temper. During and after the divorce, Jack had been extremely bitter, and she often worried that he might do something violent, though he had never made any threats. Was it possible that he was now planning something, and that this message was a warning? The two women thought that if they used a Ouija board, they might be able to get more information about the warning. They didn't have one in the house, but were able to buy one in Pentwater. The message delivered via the Ouija board was even more terrifying than the one that had come via automatic writing. When Celeste asked what was going to happen, the board quickly spelled out, "Murder, you and your child." The board's final word was, "Prepare." What could they do? Call the police and tell them that a message on a Ouija board had warned them about murder that might be committed? The police certainly would not believe that story. The women had no guns or other weapons in the house. All they could do was move into the most secure part of the house and make doubly sure that all the doors and windows were locked. The two women did not get any sleep that night. They stayed up playing cards and jumping at every time they heard a sound. Finally, dawn came. Nothing had happened. Celeste and Buell were tired and relieved, but they also felt just a bit foolish. Had all this excitement been for nothing? 2 days later, they discovered that they had not been foolish after all. A friend called and asked Celeste if she had seen her ex-husband recently. She said no, that she didn't even think he was in the area anymore. The friend then told her that just 2 nights earlier, the night the women had received the warning and hidden in the locked room, Jack had showed up at a party in a nearby town. He was very drunk, and he had a gun. He began waving the gun around and saying that he was going to kill his ex-wife and child. Some of the men at the party grabbed Jack and took the gun away from him. They held him until he sobered up a bit and calmed down. By 3 a.m, he seemed to have come back to his senses, and he was allowed to leave. No one had seen him since. Had Jack really left town as he promised the people at the party that he would? Or did he go down to the old house, still intent on carrying out his death threat? Perhaps he became discouraged when he discovered that the women that he hated had barricaded themselves in the house. Whatever the truth was, it's clear enough that the threat was real when the warnings came through. Sorry about that jump scare with a little blast of horn there, but I thought that would add a nice little chill at the end there. What a creepy story that was, and a very scary instance. Who knows, but that death might have been waiting on the other side of that locked door that night, just waiting for them to come out. And so I leave you with that little chilling thought, and I thank you again for tuning in for another episode of The Haunted Collection. Please tune in another couple of weeks when I come back for more creepy stories. Until then, don't forget to visit myhaunteddolls.com and purchase your books or merchandise today at the Redbubble store. Check out the YouTube channel and be sure to subscribe and follow, and please share that and these episodes of this show so that others can tune in and build our audience. Thank you, as always, for your support. Please have a good evening. Keep those doors and windows locked tight. Watch out for those crazy time changes and those written warnings that just might appear. But other than that, have a happy haunting.